Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back to an hour two of Old School. Austin Orman, Jay Foreman with you. Another couple hours brought to you by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. A couple more hours might be all that Kalen DeBoer has left in Tuscaloosa. Okay, probably not. $69 million buyout as it stands right now. But Jay, we got some serious numbers to talk about when it comes to Alabama and Florida State. First of all, the Nebraska standpoint of this, shout out to Arbitrary Analytics for this. The Nebraska Cornhuskers have fewer losses than Alabama for the first time since October 4th of 2014. Nebraska was 5-0 while Alabama was 4-1. That lasted all of 5 hours before Nebraska lost on the road to a good Michigan State team that night. So it's been about 11 years since Nebraska's had fewer losses than Alabama. And then how about this? More on the Alabama side of things. Kalen DeBoer has 4 losses at Alabama as a 14 or more point favorite. He's been the coach there for 14 games. Nick Saban lost 3 games as a 14 or more point favorite out of 139 games at Alabama. It's hard to be the guy following the guy, but man, this is not how Alabama fans saw their season starting off.
In their mind, in their hopeful mind.
Tommy Castellano saw it this way, though.
It's over. I'm dead serious.
It's over. He's done? There's no coming back from this.
It's not about him. The program's over. It's over. Because the thing that they don't do, when you start to see the videos, the guys laughing when Florida State was kneeling the ball, lack of effort, running to the ball, just lack of even the smallest details. I think that, I always referenced last year after the Vanderbilt, they're talking about, guys got to be on time to meetings. There's 18. This has nothing to do with talent.
Yeah. I mean, Bama came in with probably a top 5 roster in the sport this year.
It's over. The fabric is over.
The mystique is gone.
I know when I left, I saw the change of some of the guys that they brought in. So, and here's the thing, when you've won to their magnitude, the guys that show up late think they put in the work that was done before. Mm-hmm. So the entitlement comes in. The easy excuse is these guys are getting paid money. Okay. I think the problem with a lot of people when it comes to NIL, which is great. Look, I want everybody to get paid. My favorite quote, if they're dumb enough to pay you millions of dollars, take it. Do not give it back.
Don't apologize.
Do not apologize. But I think also the fans out there or you get people in the media are like, it's on the coaches. No, this is not on the coaches. Sure. Can DeBoer be tighten up a little bit? Yeah, he needs to find a happy medium between what he likes to do, what he would have worked substantially at times at other places, and where Nick Saban is. He needs to move a little bit towards that, period. If he fights it, he's going to get fired. And sure, he's going to get 69 million reasons to get fired, but he doesn't want to move his family. So he needs to move towards that. He's never going to be Nick Saban, so he doesn't have to do it. But now back to the players. Here's the problem with some of the people in the media, and they're talking about the adults and all that. Now, this ain't a coaching thing. I think players have lived, and some fans want to live in this euphoria of you get paid with no expectations and no accountability. Because one of the things that's interesting is, not sure, me and Reggie Herring got after it. But that's just because of our relationship. Now, you've had coaches that get after players, but in the pros I'm talking about. But you very rarely see coaches yelling at players. Mm-hmm. You want to know why? Because you're going to get cut.
Yeah.
And you better be motivated, and you're going to be held accountable. And there's no portal, so there's no running. You better, if you don't like your situation, you better figure it out. You know what I'm saying? You better figure out how to add something to your game. It's whether it's, you know, get bigger, faster, stronger, watch more tape, whatever it needs to be. Play harder, X, Y, and Z, or else you're going to be jettisoned, and there will be no return. Mm-hmm. You will be in outer space. Whereas in college, I think kids want, on one hand, they don't want to be judged, critiqued, or held accountable. But on the other hand, they want to be treated like in the real world. They want to get patted on the back. They want to get paid. They want all the accolades, and they only want to live on this. That's euphoria. That's fake. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you have to think, you got a lot of guys on that roster making well over $300,000-$500,000. The guys that didn't really play well, didn't have a lot of effort, and particularly defensively, Proctor looked horrible.
Mm-hmm. That was the weird part to me. Like, I know Florida State's got some dudes, but for Proctor to look that bad.
He looked good initially. His biggest weakness is he doesn't sustain blocks. He's kind of a waist bender versus a knee bender. Those are things that he has to work on. But when you got to think, somebody, I imagine the coaches that are coaching these guys aren't making what they're making, or if they're making close to it, so then they're not really listening. So then now I go right back to the players. Okay. What you put on tape, that's a you problem.
Mm-hmm.
Period. That's a want to thing. That's a what's inside you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sure. A different voice. You see it sometimes, a different voice. It does it, you know, like you see in the pros, you know, you bring in another coach, you get an uptick or whatever. That is somewhat true. But if this, what they've been doing, this is what's not inside you. And that means you are not a competitor.
Mm.
But the same team players will say, I'm going to the pros. I want to be a pro. I want to do this. No, you ain't. You're done. You shut the doors. It's no longer over. You're no longer relevant. It is O-V-E-R. I've seen it from afar at other places, right? Felt it, and I know exactly what it looks like. I know what it looks like. I see a bunch of titled punk players that are getting paid, right? That aren't competitors, and they're okay with it. Now you got a fan base that's
not okay with it.
That's not okay with it. And they're in a catch-22 because you don't want to start running through coaches and cycling through coaches, and then you got to give the board time, as he should, because I think he's still doing some good things. He's got to figure it out how to kind of, and it's really hard because, you know, Nick Saban was details, discipline, toughness. And so he pushed you towards it or you would be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Here, these guys are just doing whatever they want and then just going, now they'll get up for a game or two. Now, whether it's LSU or whatever the game is, they'll get up for one, they'll show it, but they're not going to play college football playoffs. What they put on tape in the first game of the season, there's no that is something they have been doing. That is a natural habit.
Mm-hmm. It's human.
Yes.
But you got to fight it.
Sure. Yeah. But this, they've been, that's a natural action,
mm-hmm,
and reaction to friction.
Yeah.
That's just who they are. That's how they've been doing things. You don't go down in the first game of the season and, like, you're in play, like, 12, and you're jogging. Like, I know that, you know, like, dude, you would have, like, when I play, you get punched doing that, let alone you probably never will play again. I've seen guys that I played with get beat a couple times when we played Washington. They were just never played. No more. Gone. There is no – a lot of times there is no second chances when it's – when the intensity is cranked up.
Did you see some of this from Alabama last year?
Oh yeah.
So
there it is.
Does it stand to reason that some of this was building even while Nick Saban was there?
It was a healthy fear. It wasn't going to happen. It just wasn't going to happen.
So then it is DeBoer's fault.
No, it's more of the players' fault. It's a change in leadership.
Players took advantage of the situation, but, let their worst instincts come out.
Sure. But they're grown enough to know right from wrong. And you're grown enough to cash those checks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're grown enough to know how to play football. You know what the effort is something that you can control. A coach can, they only have a certain amount of time with you.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're just going to say, hey, we're going to run, let's play tough today. Ready, break. Like, this is the game of football. This is the that's the number one thing that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's whether it's in you or not. And if you're okay with it, then that spreads faster than anything. So you got some guys that need to check themselves. They look soft.
But if they're not going to check themselves, then it falls to other players to check them. If those players can't, then it falls to the coaches. So let me ask you, you say it's OVER over for Alabama. If you're saying they're not a playoff team, I'm fine with that. I can get on board with that if this is what it looks like.
If they do, they'll be out quick.
So what's the fix? Is it DeBoer's got to change what he looks for in recruiting? Is it instilling a different mindset in the position coaches? Because as much as this is the biggest job for Kalen DeBoer, I mean, winner, right? Yeah. At the FCS level, Division III level, whatever, comes up to Washington, pretty quickly takes them to the college football playoff. It's also the biggest job for a bunch of his assistant coaches. The Bama name is going to get these guys in the door with guys that they wouldn't, been able to knock on the front door, approach the front porch at a previous school with, right? Is it on the recruiters for misidentifying Kalen DeBoer? Does he have to change who he is, who he operates? Or is it as simple as he's just got to rein in control of the guys currently in the program? They can still be fine. Because if it's OVER over, you're better off cutting ties now, paying the $70 million.
No, you can't cut. You can't fire the coach. This conversation is what you have after maybe you don't look good in week 8 or 9, and you've been playing. You're 6-1, 7-0.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get back to the details, bro. This is game 1. You the biggest game out there, and you played a team that was ripe for the picking. Florida State got stronger because they sensed weakness.
Mm-hmm.
You need some real leaders in there that's going to call guys to the carpet and challenge some guys. Now, coaches can do something. Sure. Can he change some stuff? Sure. It's a lot easier. The old saying is a lot easier to go from being like, a really, really hard coach lighting it up. Now, he's going to have to really try to change to about face. He's going to have some coaches. You need guys in the locker room with like, dang, what did you hear what he said to so-and-so? It's got to be complete silence when we're in that team meeting room.
So is this the Ned Stark situation to some of those players? Maybe the Kalen DeBoer things aren't fully bought in. Hey, you're a good player. You probably give us our best chance to win, but I got to make an example out of you because you've done this. Are we to that point Alabama?
Not yet, but there's nothing like good peer pressure watching a couple of those plays. I would ask, all I would do is I'd be in the team meeting room and it was like 94 and 42. I was like, what you laughing at? What's funny? Tell me exactly so we all can laugh at it. Because if it's legitimately funny after you just got your butt kicked, well, then I want to know I would like to have a humor. I'd like to have a good laugh right now because I probably ain't slept in 2 days.
My wife's not happy with me because now that way we put our house on the market.
I hate everything.
Okay. Including you.
Yeah, okay. I hate how you play. I don't hate you. I hate how you play. Right now, I hate life right now. We lost, right?
Mm-hmm.
But since something was so funny after we got our butt kicked on national TV,
mm-hmm.
I just would – why don't you guys come up here and we'll go through it together so we all can have a laugh. And then you know what? When it's really funny and I'll be the judge, then we'll move forward.
Hmm.
That's what you need to do. Because these guys, look, they're getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
So, right? But it's only to December. So it's been your time for a long time. So because I'm assuming that you get paid in or signed a contract in January. So you've kind of been kind of doing this for a while. I start playing plays. Hey, Ryan Williams. Okay, look at this catch against Georgia. Bro, you got four drops.
Ryan Williams has gone four straight games without a touchdown and four straight games under 100 yards.
It's not even the yards. Why are you dropping the ball? You scared? What are you scared of? Oh, sure, Simpson could play better. I say Proctor, what are you doing? Defensively, what are we doing? I mean, at this point, we gotta have, we're not you're not going to the DB room to what we watching this whole game together because we are in this together.
Yeah.
And then you, I mean, you gotta be like, hey, I need to coach more. Okay. The details haven't been the details. You talked about, I guess they were talking about some guys that, you know, when they run in gas, they ain't hit the line. I can guarantee we hitting the line. We got line police. Okay. Meeting start at 9. You better be there 8:55. Doors locked. You locked out. You're going to have to look. We've tried to do. Look, I'll go back to the conversation we had with my dad. He said, it is a democracy until you make it a dictatorship. I didn't know what either one was. He said, trust me, you'll find out. So, you know, a few times I had to find out.
So you never did because you're so well behaved, always minding your P's and Q's, right?
No, I got jacked up a couple of times. He had to, you know, let me know where I stood. And I never forgot it.
Well, and to that point, maybe that's where this Alabama team is right now. Except who knows what the standard is that Kalen DeBoer set. Because I think generally you have the reins on a little bit tighter, the younger, more immature, more inexperienced you are, you know, as a coach, as a parent, whatever. And then you trust your kid, your players to grow up and handle fewer moments of oversight, the older, the more mature, the more experienced they get. It's really hard to give a lot of freedom when they're young and then try to rein them in down the road.
Yeah.
I'm going to be so fascinated to watch to see how much pushback there is from inside, Jay, because not that Kalen DeBoer wants to come in, be a hard act, be someone that he's not. He's got to be himself. That's the only way he's going to be successful in Alabama. But you can have different personalities, but the same standard. And clearly that's not being met. And it's going to be a big test of Alabama's maturity to see if they have it in them to reel it in. Or if Kalen DeBoer, you know, starts to take on a little stricter tone, how much pushback is there from what positions, what groups of guys on the team? Or are they like, yeah, no, this is the kick in the pants we needed. It's time for us to lock in. This isn't who we are. Our eyes are open. You got our attention.
Yeah, you could. Nick Saban still lives in Alabama, right? Or wherever, Tuscaloosa. Don't he have an office?
Probably. Okay. I mean, I'm at least giving him an office, even if he doesn't want one.
I think he has an office. Me and him gonna have we're gonna get a nice bottle of wine, whatever. We're gonna have.
What do you think Nick Saban drinks? Is he a deep red crimson wine guy?
Probably.
I can see it. He doesn't strike me as a brown liquor guy.
We can get some. Well, he is from West Virginia. That's just probably
straight moonshine. Yeah.
Whatever. We're gonna have some steaks. We're gonna come and say, hey, look, man, I want to make this work because I think Kalen DeBoer is a good coach. There's no doubt about it. I think there's only one Nick Saban, like there's only one Bill Parcells, like there's only one Tom Osborne, X, Y, and Z. But I do think you need to shape where you're Kalen DeBoer for Alabama, because I think there is some learning lessons for him because he's taken over Alabama at a unique time to where it's the money that these players are getting paid or is running rampant. Mm-hmm. This isn't the Alabama that Nick Saban took over, nurtured, matured, reinvented, nurtured, matured again, then retired when it became a free-for-all. This is a new Alabama, but it's still Alabama. The stuff that's going on, you're going to take some advice from them. Don't be scared of seeking some counsel from an outside view that's been very successful because he has an experience and a view that's not only just set in stone in Tuscaloosa. He can bring, he's worldly in the football.
He's been to Miami. He's been to Baton Rouge. He's been to East Lansing. He's seen some stuff.
And he knows how to deal with the pressure of being down there. Mm-hmm. And he could be a great advocate. He's not trying to come take your job. If he wanted your job, he would come get it. He's not taking your job. He wants Alabama to be successful. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they've talked or whatever. And I'm sure, you know, he's like, hey, it's a little rough. And, you know, and Kalen DeBoer knows what he's seeing. I'm sure he's spinning his wheels on how, like, all right, how can I get these guys that I you know, you want to put a lot of trust in your players. You believe in your leadership. You believe in the players because he knows those players better than any of us that are talking about it. So I'm assuming that what he saw is seeing on tape, I'd like to, this is the best case scenario. What he's seeing on tape is an outlier and it's not what he's seen before. And it was just circumstantial because I'm sure it was hot down there. It was humid because it just rained. Okay, I'm trying to think of every scenario.
But he's seen Gus Malzahn's offenses before.
Sure. That's on the defense. But a lot of times it comes with effort. I know the big man was out, which really hurt them. And Gus Malzahn was running the ball specifically to where he could affect the thing. But the depth is there. But then I keep going back to the players.
I do.
Even the, more importantly, the holdovers from Saban. Because you know right from wrong. Young punk Jay Foreman coming in that's just got there that I'm good enough to play. I don't know any different.
He's not supposed to know any different.
No.
Not yet.
You know right from wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I always think like, you know, when they say, and sometimes another voice, another idea does help. But when it's significantly different, then that just let me know you've been making the choice. And I don't want to, if you're getting paid, and here's what I always tell people about kids getting paid or college kids getting paid. You are getting paid at a rate when it's very high, or when you're getting paid at all, you know, on top of your scholarship and everything, essentially as income, but you're getting paid, especially guys that are really getting paid, you're getting paid not to be and not to play, not to act, whatever age you're at. Mm-hmm. Whether it's 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, heck, you know, you got 24, 25 year old. So you're getting paid.
You're 27.
Yeah. And really, you can't go, because you can't go to anybody else in the state of Alabama and cry wolf to them, because you're making probably 20, 30 times more than what they're making.
Right.
So they don't care.
Mm-mm.
Is it fair? No, it's not fair. People will say it's not fair that you're getting paid the money that you're getting paid. So you can't have it both ways. But, you know, the fact that they're not very competitive, the fact that they don't have any players, if they, like there wasn't any confrontation on the sideline and really, like, you know, emotions of that, and you got guys laughing, you could say the 90s or whatever, and I'll look at you like, you know, you like, if you're okay with getting beat, you are a loser. You should never be okay with getting embarrassed like that. You should never be okay with going out there and putting that on tape. Take the coaches out of it, because too long has been, is when something doesn't go right, it's the coach's fault. You know,
players want empowerment and they want the money, they got to get the consequences and the repercussions as well.
People looked at me crazy when I was, you know, I wasn't even really helping with Frost. I was just down there for a little bit and I was watching and I think, I forget, it was like, you know, I was like, I saw, you know, the special teams coach say, put your feet at the 8-yard line. If you have to go backwards, do not catch the ball. I saw it with my eyes.
Heard it with your ears.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know
all the above.
All right, cool. You know? All right, well, you go to the champagne or whatever, you catch the ball at the one. Well, who is everybody mad at?
The coach.
What did they say about Hardhead? Make for a soft, you know?
Make for a soft behind.
Yeah.
Ain't that the truth? Yeah. So let's posit everything you're saying is fact, that it's over for Alabama. Their fans are going to say nothing but national championship, you know, anything other than that's a disappointment. I still think that their roster has the potential.
Yes, it does.
If they pull it together. But let's say they don't pull it together. This is the mental state of this Alabama team. What would you tell Alabama fans would be an overachieving year for this team? Like, if they win a game in the college football playoff, is that overachieving for this mindset? Is making the playoff overachieving?
Making the playoffs, somehow a resurgence, is overachieving.
Even if they go 9-3 again,
when you see it, it's the most disgusting thing out of it, because that's one of the most talented, best looking rosters out there.
And I'm sure, as much as you're not sad to see Alabama lose, you hate to see talent like that go to waste.
Well, first of all, it's bigger than just Alabama. This is a college football problem. Well, Nick Saban was that dude. He's the one that everybody rode in behind.
Yeah. Throughout the game. Not just the SEC, right. Not just Bama.
He was Alexander the Great or whatever, leading everybody into the battle, and he was getting just everybody was getting the benefit of the doubt. Oh, you lost to Alabama by 20. You're better than the Big Ten champion. Oh, you're the bottom feeder in the SEC. You're way better than
Iowa. You kept
you
within 40.
Right. You're way better than Iowa because you're in the SEC. Well, the fact that they're gone or he's gone, all that credibility is gone. And if the Alabama, you know, was a big player. But also I think part of it too, and we can talk about in the next segment, the transfer portal and the NIL has watered down college football. So you're not going to get the same type of continuity. Because you could have a player, and he could be stellar at Alabama, and he could be playing really, really well, and somebody comes in and pays 3X. As a coach, you probably say, hey, you got to take that. Mm-hmm. You know, just say we had a receiver at Alabama. Say it's Ryan Williams, right? And let's just say he's getting $1 million. And let's just say Texas Tech says, you know, we'll pay you $5 million. Well, we can only pay you $2 million. How as a coach, if I'm really looking out for your best interest or as a mentor or as a hopefully a lifelong confidant or whatever, that you shouldn't go take potentially or go, you know, be interested in making almost three times what I'm paying, and I'm paying you $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Can you really blame the kid?
You can, but you would still like him to come play for you anyways.
Well, he was. He just left after he got out. He upgraded.
Nick upgrade Sanders style.
So, I mean,
it's not going to throw Nick under the bus today. Shout out Nick being here. Already.
That loss and those things on tape is more alarming than anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, Hubbard's been there for a while, right? Mm-hmm. He'd been there for a while. Big 22 had been there before a while. Ryan Williams has been there.
Simpson's been there.
Simpson, yeah, but
he hasn't played, but he's been there.
But Simpson competed. Now he played hard.
He did.
Right. Now he could play better, but the first step, he played hard.
You shouldn't be saying that at Alabama.
Some of them other dudes were chilling.
Straight up.
But you shouldn't have to be leaning on Simpson so much when your star receiver's got the drops. The other one, you know, he number five, was a Jeremy Brennan. I think he had a muscle cramp or strain or something like that. But more importantly, is defense. I'm up here touting that's going to be the best D-line in the nation. You just got ran through. The fact that Florida State was talking junk to you while they were doing it, they were 1-11? 2-10?
2-10. And maybe that's what we need to shout out. As much as this is an indictment on top 10 Alabama, who won't be top 10 for very long, maybe we got to credit Florida State.
Well, we could talk about next.
You know, maybe Mike Norvell made some good hires and got some good talent. Let's do that. And a question from our starter, Heyman Jewelers. Text line, D-Man, we see you. We'll get to your question when we get back to Old School.
Watch Old School live on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back to it. Halfway home on Old School. Lost Norman J. Foreman with you. This segment brought to you by Heartland of Nebraska Windows, based out of Howland, Nebraska. They offer free estimates, full window replacements, all vinyl triple pane windows, and lifetime warranties on everything while keeping their prices affordable. Heartland of Nebraska Windows is locally and family owned with their own team of installers. Give them a call today for more information at 402-430-3852. You can also visit online at heartlandofnebraskawindows.com. A couple things from the text line we'll get to here in just a sec. But, Jay, from the Florida State side of things, dang, impressive opener. Thomas Castellanos was able to back up his offseason trash talk, so Diego Pavia, stage is set for you now. How about this? Florida State only throws the ball 14 times, only completes 9 passes, but they go for 152 yards. That's pretty good efficiency. But, of course, the 49 rushing attempts, 46 of them if you factor out the kneel downs at the end of the game. 46 for 236 against Alabama on the ground.
Yeah.
Maybe, just maybe, it's one game. You had offseason to prep for. That goes into it. I get it. Maybe Florida State found something. Maybe Mike Norvell's like, yeah, last year's not happening again. Made a couple darn good hires. Got some talent out of the portal. Shout out Tony White and his defense. I mean, his defense and John Butler's defense allowed the same number of points. So you can say both sides won, I guess, yeah. in that trade-off. But shout out to Florida State. Maybe, just maybe, they found something again.
Yeah, I mean, Gus Malzahn, I mean, he was obviously at UCF and wanted to call plays. And, you know, for a guy, he's like the outlier, the guy that runs kind of tempo. And you compare him to Hugh Freeze and Lane, he runs the ball. And once he finds, like, a little chink in your armor, I mean, he's going to keep running at you. And that's – and then I think the quarterback really made some plays and wore them out. And I will say this, a mobile running quarterback – is the hardest thing to defend in any age of college football, but in particularly right now. You're not, you can't strike them, so they're running with a lot less fear. The rules are set up so you can be way more aggressive in the passing game, and then schematic wise, you know, Gus Malzahn, once he finds a weakness, and you got a quarterback that fits his system, who he knew before. And he kind of been waiting to kind of get his hands on him. I mean, it was the perfect game plan for the situation.
To that point about running quarterbacks, Matt Rhule said in his presser today, we'll get more of this at 5 or the 5 o'clock hour. So the holy grail of things that make for a tough cover of an offense, they run outside zone effectively, if they go tempo, and if they have a mobile quarterback. That's kind of the unholy trinity, I guess, for defensive coaches to scheme against. He says that's what Cincinnati did a lot of, made him tough. Nebraska still found a way to win. What is it about those three things in tandem that are, they're so difficult?
Well, outside zone is that you can get to the edges. That means you're probably, they're probably resetting the edge because you're not able to set the edge. Tempo is just more or less, I think, communication. And then, you know, obviously you got a young defense trying to gel right now. So it's probably more problematic in game one versus like game five. You get what I'm saying? First game.
Yeah.
And obviously he had, or Sorsby had been in this offense before, so that's kind of like a double factor with the second one. And a mobile guy is, I told you, the hardest guy, the hardest thing to deal with is you got great coverage, you think you got great leverage on, you know, in your coverage, and then your pass rush breaks down in the sense of you have to be at the right levels, you have to rush with the, it'd be very disciplined, and he, you know, he breaks the pocket, which Castellanos did. And he did some stuff to get out of there where the guys were doing the right thing. He was just better. And then he gets on the loose and there's space. It can be a problem. Same with Sorsby. I mean, he gets loose and he's a great athlete. And he did this last year, kind of like the same stat line. Remember the game that where he ran for all those yards and he had
Iowa State.
Yeah. He only threw for 60 some yards, I think. Same thing. And so, you know, he provided some problems. I think, you know, Nebraska can use this tape for when maybe you play Michigan State's quarterback can run a little bit. Maryland's quarterback can run a little bit, probably not to this clip. But for if you, you know, for the future, you can definitely learn from it, you know, maybe different pass rush, you know, stunts and learn, you know, and the guys got to learn from it as well.
Let's go to our text line here, brought to you by Sartor Hamann Jewelers. John says, I don't feel bad for Alabama. They've been good forever. Their fan base needs to know what it's like to not be better, what they have been for a while, and find out that it's not all sunshine and roses. John, let's take Alabama out of that text, put Nebraska in there. Sure, that's the same thing that have been texted in to hundreds of radio stations across the country about Nebraska.
Listen.
So guess what? Now it's Alabama's
turn. That's what I would say. I would call some, you know, I'll call, you know, or, you know, I play with Rutledge and all these guys and say, if you don't get it together, buckle up because people have been waiting for it. It's the dominant run from the, okay, just say from 83 to 2003, give or take. And I know that with Bo and they were obviously before, but, you know, it's been some time where teams have been waiting for Nebraska's downfall.
They've and been waiting,
and now they, you know, there's blood in the water.
They're going to pounce on it.
And now you're going to have, you know, indirect rivals, you know, like, you know, Iowa was a rival of Nebraska before we even joined the Big Ten when Nebraska started to slow down. They started to compare themselves to Nebraska, you know, then, and then now obviously they you know, in the same, you know, Big Ten conference. And so, it, you know, I think it's getting close to that. I think they have a more realistic, they're in the time right now, they have a chance to stop the, you know, the bleeding.
To take the kick in the pants, yeah, turn it around.
Turn it around. This mm-hmm. could be something that where it turns them around. Maybe you're not going to go in the 20-year run like they did before because of all the dynamics. But to get kicked in the teeth like that, to get beat up like you did against Michigan, who had their like 45th string quarterback in there. And you know,
that was an odd number. It wasn't even an even number.
46th and 1, 44th. It was bad. And then you know, the way, you know, you lost to Vanderbilt the year before. You know, you had number 15, I think his last name was Harrison, who had like multiple like personal fouls, outbursts. Yeah. And it was, at least heck, in that case, I'll take the emotion. At least he cared. Right now we gotta really control how you do it.
Channel it.
Yeah, channel it. But this teams have been waiting for your downfall.
D-Man on the text line kind of feeds into that. I'm too young to remember. Was this what it was like in 2002 for Nebraska? Seems like the world is ending for Alabama. Jay, I know you were a little busy in 2002 with this little NFL deal. I'm also a little bit too young to remember, but it wouldn't shock me if the dynamics were similar. Because like it wasn't bad under Frank Solich. It was just a noticeable step down, and I'm sure it did feel like the world was ending.
Yeah. I think everybody looks at that national championship game as I was like that Colorado game. Mm. When Chris Brown he looked like Eric Dickerson back there. Right? And then like you needed five things to happen and then you got in.
Yeah.
So then it was kind of like fool's gold. And then the clock struck 12. You know, it could be, you know, I think Bo did some good things and stuff like that. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't think Bama, I think they have enough pride. The SEC has enough invested in them being good. It won't go to the depths of hell per se, but also know as potentially could because they, you know, the way that they've been playing. Now they have to make sure that they, at least from top to bottom, before it gets into the locker room, that they have the standard that they want to be met. Mm-hmm. And then they need to go recruit specifically guys that will uphold that standard. Now it's hard because you could get a great leader and be a great player. He doesn't have to be a great player, it's just that somebody else needs him. And then you got to be willing to pay for it.
Claytonia John says the Bill Callahan years were the end of the world, literally. Let's not forget that Bill Callahan made more bowl games and won more division titles than Nebraska's previous head coach before the current guy, and made more bowl games than the guy before that current guy. But I think it goes to your point about the culture. Who are you hiring? But this is another aspect of it, Jay. That was like the 40-some-day coaching search to finally land on Bill Callahan. I used to be of the mindset that, oh, yeah, these big programs should be able to hire whoever they want. What we're finding is that's just not true. Because think about Nebraska. Maybe it's a little different coming off Frank Solich, the way he was let go. Maybe it was the Steve Peterson factor that maybe eroded some trust. But, I mean, you're less than 10 years removed, and you're 6 years removed from the 97 title at that point, 6 years, 7 years. That's still within enough recent memory, even with all the changes in college football. You would have thought Nebraska could have gone out there and landed a guy. I would have thought the same thing for Carolina. You know, they handed over to their guy, Hubert Davis. He thought it was in the family, and I love how that's worked out personally. Syracuse.
Yeah.
You know, Villanova, after Jay Wright retired. I mean, these programs, Kentucky, who I think made a good hire in Mark Pope, but not the big splashy guy. Mm. You can meet, so you're telling me Scott Drew wouldn't leave little old Baylor for Lexington? I know he's built a life family, built that program up from basically the death penalty on the basketball side of things. I am less and less convinced that it's easy for these big, powerful blue blood programs to just flex their muscle and hire whoever they want anymore. I think there's a lot more at play than just, oh, we're a bigger name, bigger brand school. That, yeah, I mean, we can go back and relitigate, you know, should Alabama have hired Kalen DeBoer? Yeah, he's the opposite of Saban in a lot of ways. But I don't think there was just a long line of top head coaches. Dabo was toxic at the time. Kirby's not leaving Georgia. Sark was unproven. You gonna go get Harbaugh to Alabama? You know he's a flight risk for the NFL and all that. I'm not saying Kalen DeBoer was the perfect hire. I think Kalen DeBoer makes a lot of sense though time.
It still does.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, he's a good coach. You know, I think there's no doubt about it. He's more than qualified. I think he's worked his way up. He's successful. You don't get to the place that he's been, places that he's been, not being a good coach.
Right.
Period. I just think that how you coach at Alabama is different.
You have to keep your same principles, but it's going to look and come out a little bit differently.
Yeah.
In a blue blood like that.
And maybe it's just that he wants to be the same. Then you have to make sure whoever you got to have a couple assistants on each side of the ball that either portray or are what you aren't. Mm-hmm. I always talk about Lane Kiffin.
Complimentary football.
Yeah. One of my really good friends, JC Clark, is neighbors with Lane Kiffin down in Ole Miss. And so he knows Lane. I obviously knew Lane or no Lane or whatever. And I always, you know, I'll hear from Lane maybe once when he's with JC or whatever. But he said the best thing that Lane's learned is that he has somebody that plugs the holes and does things that he's not good at.
Cover your blind spots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what he learned from Saban. Mm-hmm. So I think
So who was that guy for Saban? Who were those guys? Was that getting the offensive coordinators that maybe had to take him out of his comfort zone a little bit?
Probably Lane and Sark and
O'Brien at all? Or are they more similar?
They're probably more similar. And, you know, I think Saban did a lot of things really good. He could probably schmooze with people because he's, you know, he could recruit. But I think with DeBoer, it's a weird mix. Everybody wants to blame him and say this is it. Sure. Yes and no, because he's not running a tight end meeting. He isn't running a linebacker meeting.
No.
So if I'm the linebacker coach and Austin Norman is late,
that shouldn't get to the head coach.
That's on me.
It's got to get to you.
That's what you're paying me for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's on me. I got to deal with you personally, and then I got to really tighten up the leaders. And if you're a leader, well, then now you're not a leader because a leader isn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have to reshape that room, and you have to be willing to do it. Now, bring in the money and all that stuff, it's a little bit harder, but you know, you're a head coach, you're gonna take a lot of arrows for what happens on the field. It did not look good. It didn't look significantly different than last year.
Right.
Now I think Jalen Milroe was a lot better than what people give him credit for. And so some of the things that and it's also a process to where this is the new Alabama. So as much as he has to adjust to Alabama, Alabama has to also do an adjustment towards him as well. Because Nick Saban isn't coming back.
No.
Okay. Dante Hightower isn't walking through there and all these things. Right? You know what I'm saying, right? So this is a new Alabama. And the standard is different. The expectations are different because college football is different. So getting to the college football playoff is probably priority number one. You can't think about that until you control the controllables. That's where the frustration comes from. Mm-hmm. Because look, in this day and age of college football, you could play Florida State and they could end up being a top 10 team. And you're like, all right, how they lost? No big deal. But it has to look a lot different.
Mm-hmm. And feel a lot different. Mm-hmm.
That felt like
the end of something.
It felt like a team, a front running team.
Mm-hmm.
That when they get punched, they're just like, hey, this is uncomfortable for me. Well, I thought you guys were going to come down here to Tallahassee, and you guys are just going to lay down for us when we just come right in with our same, you know, RVs and all that other stuff. Well, they turned up 2010 on you, and you lost by essentially 20 points. I mean, you lost by 14, but they turned the faucet off.
Mm-hmm. And lost $50,000 in the process, but I think they'll make that trade any day.
Yeah.
I'd storm the field. Nebraska beat Alabama at home.
Oh, they hit up some booster out there. They hit
Bobby Bowden Trust Fund.
Yeah, they hit it. Yeah.
Hey, got to borrow a little bit.
They could probably got a GoFundMe or something.
31-17, Florida State takes down Bama. We'll be back to wrap up Hour 2 of Old School.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
We're back wrapping up hour two of Old School. Another hour yet to go. We'll also have the weekly talk with Tom Chattel. This segment brought to you by Love Volleyball Nebraska. Love Volleyball Omaha just rebranded as Love Volleyball Nebraska. To renew your season tickets or secure them for the first time, visit lovb.com. Jay, some stats on Micah Parsons. It still feels like we haven't necessarily had a chance to dive into everything surrounding that trade, the context and everything. A couple things I think that stood out to me. First of all, the Packers this year will become the first team in NFL history to pay $100 million annually to just two players on the roster in terms of average annual value. Over $50 million for Jordan Love, I think $54-55 million for him, and $47 million for Micah Parsons. That's $102 million of the, what, $250 million salary cap. That's a cool 40% tied up in, now, arguably the two most important positions. Arguably the two best players on the roster, but that's, I think, something to monitor. And then the other thing I think was worth pointing out, yeah, so DP's brought this up a little bit, but you think back to the Charles Haley trade.
Mm-hmm.
How about this? Carmen Policy was the 49ers president and CEO when they traded Charles Haley to the Cowboys. How about this? In August 25, the Cowboys have traded Micah Parsons to the Packers, whose president and CEO is Carmen Policy's son, Ed. He's atoning for his dad's sins. Different organization. I know there's no love lost between the Niners and the Packers, but sports are crazy like that sometimes.
Yeah. Ugh. I still can't believe they traded him.
I still
can't believe Jerry Jones did that.
It was an ego thing for Jerry, right? You disrespected me. You got to get out of here.
I don't know. My whole thing is like, what did he do? What did Micah Parsons do? You know that was so bad.
I didn't think anything. I thought it was business as normal, but apparently Jerry took it as a slight.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's two things that you do not ever get rid of at the pro level.
Quarterback,
you can say college too, a franchise quarterback or a program quarterback, and a legit pass rushers because they are so hard to find.
And those are two pretty stable, consistent positions year to year.
If you can rush the passer, you're a unicorn. If you're a franchise, a program quarterback, a legit one, you're a unicorn.
So then did Georgia make the wrong move in letting Carson Beck walk? Because it worked out for Miami so far.
I think with the upgrade in receivers that they have through the portal, which is stupid. Here's the funny thing about Georgia. So when he was there, they led the nation in drops.
Yeah, it was bad last year.
But then the quarterback was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
So the quarterback leaves. You probably get a less talented quarterback, and then you upgrade the receivers. But I do like Gunnar Stockton. Yeah. I do like him.
Stockton Bennett is a perfect name for him, though.
He is a mix.
Yeah.
They probably made a little bit of a mistake, but by the way Georgia plays, I don't think the emphasis is on quarterback play. It's more kind of like that Greg McElroy type of,
A.J. McCarron.
Yeah.
Jacob
Coker. A.J. McCarron was cold-blooded, though. He just went to the Bengals at the wrong time. I liked him. I think he just – is he still with that girl?
I don't know. If Brett Musburger had it his way, he wouldn't be.
Yeah, I think that kind of like – because she became the first round pick and he became the third round pick.
Right.
It was supposed to be the other way around.
Carson Palmer or Joe Burrow?
Oof. Hey, Carson Palmer before
cold-blooded dude.
Chemo Von Offlin got a hold of him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking Carson Palmer.
And that's no slight to Joe Burrow.
There's no slight to Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is Carson Palmer before he got hurt. Joe Burrow is cold-blooded too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know who's this fashion advisor. You guys. Macaulay Culkin.
But, yeah, that's a problem.
But, I still can't believe Jerry Jones really did this.
Oh, yeah. And had no hesitations, no reservations
about
it.
This is a joke. Like, you get what I'm saying?
Micah Parsons did practice for the first time as a Packer. So
it's official.
Unless it's Photoshop. But I'm going to believe that it's real. Isn't it funny how his back issue magically cleared up, too?
Then they talking about he's going to get epidural or something like that. That brother practice. He's going to be A-OK.
He'll be fine.
Fresh legs like a mug. He's going to be destroying cats, too. He's going to be killing people.
He'll be a little colder, but he's used to that in Happy Valley. So, yeah. Not the end of the world for him.
It's tough, man. But he got paid. Congratulations to him. Well deserved, because he earned it.
Don't tell that to Jerry Jones too loudly. He might disagree with you. We'll go to break. We'll hear from Matt Rhule and plenty more ahead in the final hour of Old School.
Watch Old School live on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Old School with Foreman and Orman. On 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply in-app only.